This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
BBC Sounds. Music, Radio, Podcasts.
Days before his re-inauguration, President-elect Donald Trump was ruminating in public about all the things he would do to make America great again a second time around. He'd annex Greenland, rename the Gulf of Mexico, and any country standing in his way should expect to find its exports to the US facing swingeing tariffs. This is what Trump said about tariffs during his victorious election campaign.
To me, the most beautiful word, and I've said this for the last couple of weeks, in the dictionary today is the word tariff. It's more beautiful than love. It's more beautiful than anything. It's the most beautiful word. This country can become rich with the proper use of tariffs.
So why does he like tariffs so much? What can we realistically expect him to do? And what would the effect be on the rest of us? Step into the briefing room and together we'll find out. First, the basics. Let's find out what exactly a tariff is and how they've been used in the past. Here with me is Duncan Weldon, economist and author of 200 Years of Muddling Through. Duncan Weldon, what is a tariff?
I mean, the best way to think of a tariff is just to call it a tax. A tariff is essentially a tax imposed on foreign goods as opposed to domestic goods.
And at what point is a tariff imposed?
So a tariff is imposed at the time that a good is imported. I mean, say that we have domestically produced cars and foreign produced cars. The government could put a 20% tariff on foreign produced cars. So at the time that a foreign car was imported into Britain, you know, there'd be a 20% tax on that.
Now, let's just go through a brief history of tariffs. Have they always existed? Have they always been popular, unpopular?
So if you go all the way back to sort of the early modern period, the 1600s, the 1700s, you know, governments at that time ran themselves generally with an economic system that has come to be called mercantilism. And mercantilism was a belief that exports were good for your country and imports were bad. Because if your country was importing stuff, you were sending money, gold, to foreigners to pay for them. The idea was you want to keep imports out because imports aren't good for you. If you talk about the history of it, Britain was for a long time what was called a free trade nation. You know, Britain embraced free trade in the 19th century all the way into the 20th. Britain was a country which didn't really have tariffs, which was happy to have foreign goods flowing into Britain. Other countries took different approaches. Germany and the United States in the 19th century had a lot of protectionism. The general sense, though, is after the Second World War, in the rich world, the developed economies, tariffs were generally low and falling until about a decade ago.
Let's go back to the question of who actually pays the tariffs. You say it's a tax. You say it's levied at the point where the good comes in. But who actually pays for it?
Well, if you listen to Donald Trump, it's the country on which the tariffs have been imposed. Sadly for Donald Trump, economists would disagree. If you put a 20% tariff on Chinese imports into the United States, ultimately, the costs of that are going to be paid by American consumers. Now, they probably won't pay 20% more. Some of it will be absorbed in the forms of lower profit margins. The currency of the country subject to tariffs might fall to offset some of it. But ultimately, it means higher prices for consumers.
Now, let's look again at the trends over time between free trade and tariffs. We've lived through the era that people call globalization, and I think it was a general presumption that globalization meant the freest of free trade that you could get.
I mean, completely. You know, we had falling tariff levels, rising global trade throughout the 1980s, the 1990s, all the way up to 2008. More goods were imported, more people cross borders, more capital cross borders. And yes, the general move was towards lower tariffs, more free trade. Now, economists were always clear that, you know, if you've got two countries engaging in trade that is mutually beneficial, both countries benefit from this trade. But economists aren't stupid. They could see there were winners and losers within countries from free trade. Now, what an economist would tell you is, you know, the number of winners in any country, the overall gains, outweighed the losses. That doesn't mean there weren't losers. In an ideal world, some of those gains would have gone towards compensating the losers.
What you mean is, if, say, Ohio steel workers lost their jobs, but cheaper Chinese steel came in, then actually some other American industries would be benefiting from that.
Overall, America is benefiting from this trade. But yes, there are losses amongst, say, Ohio steel workers. And yes, in an ideal world, your domestic political system would be able to take some of those gains from the winners and compensate the losers, because there is more money than there would be otherwise. Now, that obviously didn't always happen.
Now, overall, does the size or shape of your economy impact on whether free trade or tariffs are good or bad for you?
The size of your economy does matter, for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because if you're a continental-sized economy like the United States that can produce domestically an awful lot of different goods and services and have different bits of specialization, you know, you can probably be more self-sufficient than a small open economy like Britain or the Netherlands or France. Secondly, because if you've got a lot of economic weight in the world, it is easier to throw that weight around. You know, if a small country puts tariffs on a large country and the large tariff responds with its own tariffs, you know, the small country's not going to win that economic fight.
Now, what do you do if you're a country like the UK and you're facing competition in certain markets from China and you were just to say, we won't have any tariffs at all, we will just let it rip? Would we stand in danger of losing whole industries?
Economists would say, you know, in a first best perfect world, there are no tariffs anywhere. You know, we buy from the most efficient producers wherever they are in the world. Now, we don't live in a first best world. There are distortions in the world. If you're looking at something like China, the argument becomes that, say, Chinese steel in the last decade, that what European steel producers have faced is not free and fair market competition, because the Chinese government has shoveled cheap loans and artificially subsidized and kept costs down for Chinese steel producers. They've produced too much steel, and then, in the terminology, they're dumping that steel on foreign markets. Now, there is a case, if you're facing dumping, you know, artificially cheap Chinese steel, to use tariffs to hold that out for a while. Now, I think that's fair in that case. The problem is, though, this is a very slippery slope. What counts as fair competition? What doesn't count as fair competition? If you are a country who is on the receiving end of this dumping, you don't necessarily want your own bit of that industry devastated in the short run.
If a country like, say, as big as the United States says, well, actually, we are going to deploy tariffs as a major element of policy, part of it for trade, maybe some of it for other reasons, will that country be able to get away with it without feeling the pain of it in the short, medium and long terms?
So I think in the short run, if the United States was to move heavily towards tariffs, in the short run, we'd see an awful lot of economic pain in China, in parts of the European Union, in bits of Britain that export to the United States. And, you know, in America, in the very short run, you'd see a pickup in inflation as prices rose because of these new taxes, and we should call them taxes in this case, put on lots of goods. But in the short run, you might even see a boost in American output. But, and it's a big but, in the medium to the longer term, what you're left with is higher inflation, more costly goods in America, and more importantly, less competition for American industry, less efficiency, less productivity, and slower growth in the long run. The general effect of moving towards this sort of protectionism will be maybe a short-term boost in employment and output, and that's a maybe, but almost certainly a long-term cost in terms of inflation and weaker productivity growth.
Duncan Weldon. Now let's find out what we know about Donald Trump and tariffs from the last time around. With me is Sam Lowe, partner at Flint Global, a financial consultancy. Sam Lowe, have tariffs always been an issue for Trump?
Trump's love of tariffs stems from different assumptions. One is that tariffs create leverage, so he can threaten a 10% tariff or 20% tariff on a country and they will give him something he wants to avoid those tariffs. The other reason I think he likes them in the context of being president is that he found he was able to apply them in some instances without having to go through the full democratic process, without having to involve Congress, without having there needing to be a vote. And the third reason is that it seems he's become increasingly fixated on the idea that other countries are taking advantage of the US. By taking advantage, I mean they are persistently selling more to the US than they are buying. And he sees tariffs as a means of addressing that and rebalancing said trade.
It does seem paradoxical that the richest and most powerful economy in the world sees itself as a victim of trade. And Trump's even annoyed with America's trade relationship with Canada. Does it make sense?
It doesn't make sense from the outside. The idea that the richest country on earth is somehow being penalized by the system it largely created is seemingly absurd. But the point I'd make is that it's quite a commonly held view in the US and it straddles party lines. Many Democrats also believe that the current trading system as it's set up penalizes US workers, that it's led to offshoring of jobs. It's led to the offshoring of heavy industry and manufacturing. It's led to the growth and development of China to the point that it's become a competitor. So while it does seem absurd, it's not an uncommon view in the United States.
Let's look back at the Trump first administration and be a bit more specific about what tariffs he brought in when he was in power for those 4 years.
The first tranche of tariffs were related to solar panels and washing machine imports. So this was he imposed a global tariff, so a tariff on solar panels and washing machines from everywhere. And this did lead to some retaliation from China and, for example, South Korea, bringing a WTO case. And this was in early 2018.
That's the World Trade Organization.
World Trade Organization. And around the same time, he initiated new tariffs on steel and aluminium. So this was a 25% tariff on imported steel, 10% tariff on aluminium. And this is really what most people think of when they discuss trade wars in the context of the first Trump administration, because these tariffs triggered a reaction from everyone. The EU reacted by putting eventually tariffs on headline, well-known American companies such as Harley-Davidson and also different whiskies. China also reacted. Trump had to negotiate with Canada and Mexico. It triggered quite a lot of global uncertainty and disruption. The third category, which people also talk about a lot, are the China-specific tariffs. Trump eventually imposed tariffs on around $335 billion worth of US imports, and China retaliated as well. In the midst of this, people forget Trump actually negotiated a trade deal with China in this time, which saw some of the tariffs fall away. But these tariffs did linger and continue into the Biden administration, where President Biden really did just continue on the same trend. Then other tariffs related and export controls related to semiconductors. There are also the discussion about applying tariffs to all automobile imports into the US on a national security basis, which is very confusing for those of us who don't consider cars a national security issue, but those never materialized. He did threaten tariffs on Mexico in relation to illegal immigration across the border, although that was dealt with at the time via an agreement with the Mexican government. So he really does enjoy tariffs.
What can we say about that first administration, the impact the tariffs that were imposed actually had?
In terms of the impact on the US consumer, all of the studies that have been done demonstrate that these tariffs came at a cost to the US consumer. But I suppose the point Trump would make is that the US economy fared very well during that time. So there's a question to how much that was really felt. The tariffs have also been shown to demonstrate that they negatively impacted those US manufacturers that used inputs from abroad, so import parts and then put them together in the US, it increased their costs. But again, the Trump one economy was pretty buoyant. So the academic view and all the evidence suggests that these tariffs were negative for the US economy and also negative for the trade partners they were imposed on, but it's not necessarily viewed that way by the politicians involved.
Now, Sam, What is Trump saying he will do this time he's president?
He suggested lots of things, and depending on when this airs, he may have even made some further threats. But in the run-up to the election, one of his core themes was this idea of a universal tariff, so an additional tariff of 10 or 20% on all imports into the United States. So this would increase everyone's costs when exporting to the US, and the idea is that this would serve to rebalance US trade slightly. He's also mentioned specific higher tariffs in relation to China. He's also mentioned specific higher tariffs on Canada and Mexico at different points in relation to concerns he has about the border, specifically in relation to illegal immigration and the import of fentanyl. The most recent tariff threat I can think of is the proposed tariffs on Denmark if they don't give him Greenland. That, of course, is going to be slightly difficult to resolve and goes well beyond trade.
Sam Lowe. And just a quick reminder that you can subscribe to the Briefing Room podcast by visiting BBC Sounds, and you'll get access to the entire back catalogue, which includes the one about how prepared is the UK for floods, the one about avian flu, and the one about the AI revolution.
Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Back to tariffs, and it's time to peer through a glass darkly. What do the experts think will actually happen over the next 4 years? With me are Meredith Crowley, Professor of Economics at the University of Cambridge, David Hennig, Director of the UK Trade Policy Project, and joining me again is Sam Lowe. Meredith Crowley, do you think Trump is really going to bring in the tariffs he's talking about?
I think he will bring some of them in as a negotiating strategy. And I think looking ahead, it's useful for policymakers in Europe, the UK, Canada, Mexico, to think about what it is that he wants from them, what they can deliver. And I wouldn't be surprised if he actually goes forward with tariffs, and then there's an opportunity for him to dial them back if one of his requests in some area gets met by policymakers in the other country.
David, is that also your assumption?
I certainly think we'll be seeing more tariffs. I don't think it will be exactly as he's said. There are US companies who need the intermediate goods to make their own products that come in from other countries, and putting tariffs on those will immediately add to costs of production in the US. So one way or other, I think there will be a lot of lobbying going on in the US by companies to avoid certain tariffs. So I think you'll see a pretty mixed, probably rather confused picture.
One of the problems with that is that it means that lots of different countries are being treated differentially.
I don't think President Trump is going to care very much about WTO rules that say you have to treat other countries equally. He showed that in his first term. I expect him to treat different countries differently. And I think if you are the UK or other governments, you're just going to have to try and work out what you do at any given point, and countries are just going to have to navigate it as best they can.
Meredith.
Another thing I'll just build upon what David said about the cost increase for US firms. A fascinating piece of research by Beta Yavorchik and Justin Pierce, and they looked at round one of Trump tariffs and what we call tariff exemptions. And so even when the U.S. imposes an across-the-board tariff cut on all firms in a country, there's still provisions in law in which a firm can say, oh, you know what? We get something from one particular company in the UK. If you raise the tariff on that, that's a devastating cost shock for us. Will you, the U.S. government, please remove it? And even in round one of the Trump tariffs, there were a lot of these tariff exemptions.
I was going to ask you, Sam, let's suppose that a significant proportion of the tariffs that have been promised are brought in. What could we say would be the impact, firstly, on the global economy and on other countries?
So the global impact, you would assume, would be negative. In a sense, a universal tariff would be easier for firms and countries to manage. Say if Trump imposed a universal 10 or 20% tariff. If we have all of these exemptions coming in, if there's lots of uncertainty, if we're subject to changes based on what he's going to tweet, what you have is a form of weaponized uncertainty, a phrase that Meredith created. And this uncertainty has its own cost, whereby firms don't know how they're going to have to interact with the US economy on a day-to-day basis.
David, what do you see as being the major possible impacts upon the world economy?
I think a lot will depend on the extent to which other countries see the need to retaliate. Most countries know that putting on tariffs is not a good idea. There's not really a great demand from other countries to follow the US. There may be, there will probably be some retaliation. All of this adds to cost, but it isn't quite of the same order as some would fear. And we have to bear in mind that a large amount of world trade these days is in services. So the world trade system broadly survives, but at cost. And already we're looking at the potential for slowdowns in growth, for higher inflation. All of these things could easily happen, but it's probably not a depression era outcome.
Meredith, what can we say, once again, if let's say a significant proportion of these tariffs are imposed, would be the impact upon the US economy and in particular on the US consumer?
So I'll make a distinction between short run, 1 to 2 year horizon impacts and longer run. In the short run, Trump won tariffs, didn't pass through to the consumer. Basically, the price went up at the Los Angeles dock and importers paid higher prices for what they brought in. They absorbed that price increase from the tax into their own profit margins and didn't really pass the cost on to the American consumer immediately. What we now see, what we're doing longer run studies at 4 or 5 year horizons, is these costs have pushed through to American consumers, both direct costs of the tariffs. But the other thing that's very important is U.S. supply chains have totally reoriented in response to the tariffs that once Biden came in, people realized we're going to be there for the long haul. At that point, we started to see Chinese content being sold to Vietnam. Vietnam adding value, making products with Chinese parts, selling those sophisticated parts onto Mexico, Mexico putting them into various consumer items, sending it across the border to the U.S. So there's still Chinese content entering the U.S. via this roundabout supply chain. But I think what we can think in the long run is we'll see something similar. Short run won't be a huge impact on U.S. consumers. Once sort of, I think, a sort of negotiation round happens with U.S. trading partners, if Trump brings down the tariffs, things will go back to sort of normal. If he doesn't get what he wants and these tariffs stay on permanently for the U.S., we're going to see shifts of production around the world outside economies. So, for example, you know, trade between, say, Mexico and the U.K. or Mexico and the European Union. If they're not able to sell so easily to the U.S., they might intensify their trading relationships with one another. So that the outcome on countries outside the U.S. sort of trade partner nexus can have some sort of offsetting positive effects. In total, when we do economic analysis, the consequence is negative because these tariffs are just introducing cost into the whole global economy.
Sam, what do you think will happen with China? How do you think the Chinese will respond to what Trump said? Because as far as I can see from what he's threatened, it doesn't appear to be conditional on any Chinese behaviour. He's just saying he's going to do it.
So I think you're right. I mean, in terms of Trump's approach more generally, it tends to be the case that he threatens tariffs unless you either commit to buy more stuff from the US or you commit to support his endeavours elsewhere. So, for example, the UK or EU might come under pressure to apply tariffs to China as well and join the US in doing so. And then the third bucket is just other countries are nice to him. So he might let you off if, for example, you let him visit the king, or if you do something else, maybe you bulldoze over some wind farms that are blocking the view from his golf course in Scotland. Of those three, I think the one thing China could do to placate him slightly is buy more things from the US. But even then, given the commitments he's made and given the precedent, I think the working assumption is that there are going to be more tariffs applied to Chinese goods, although the impact might be variable. So take, for example, electric vehicles. Chinese electric vehicles are already very rare in the US because there is already a high tariff. It was 25% or 27.5%, and then Biden put it up to 102.5%. Trump has said he's going to put it up to 200%, in practice probably 202.5%. That's not going to make much more of a difference. No cars is still no cars.
If I'm sitting in the Chinese Politburo and I'm looking at what Trump's doing, I might want to say, look, we can't actually let the Americans get away with this kind of way of trying to deal with trade partners internationally. We've got to show that we're made of sterner stuff. Or are they far more pragmatic than that, Meredith?
I think that domestically within China, they're stuck in that they have to think about how their policy appears to their domestic population. And I was speaking with an official from China about a year ago, and I said, why don't you just get the European Commission folks, people from the UK, Japan, and the US, along with the Chinese, around a table? And why don't you just all figure out what you want with regard to different industries like steel? And they said, we can't negotiate anything with the US because we were completely humiliated by the negotiations that followed Trump's initial announcements of tariffs back in 2018. And domestically, the Chinese, you know, labor market, employment's a mess. They can't get enough jobs for their own people. And so I think that they are really stuck in that they can't look weak to their domestic population. And so I think that makes it hard for them to make any kind of substantive concessions that maybe Trump would want to have.
David, do you agree with that?
I think there is a part of the Chinese government thinking that is... if the US is retreating behind high tariff walls, we have a chance to expand our global reach. One of the reasons why Trump's tariffs potentially have less of an impact and he has less leverage than he thinks is because the US is no longer the leader in world trade. 120 countries or so have China as their major trade partner. In one sense, yes, China will potentially complain and can't easily do deals, but they can also see the opportunity. That said, it's not straightforward because they know that the EU is not completely friendly towards China. The US will be putting pressure on its allies, the UK, EU, Australia, Japan, to try to take measures against China. So I suspect that they'll see the opportunities, they'll also see the threats. Like everyone else, they're just trying to see ways through this.
Sam, let's think about what the circumstances are, what the implications are for the UK. We've just been talking there about the pressure from the US, for example, to take greater measures as the UK against Chinese goods. Do you think we have the capacity to stand out against such demands, or are we just going to go along with them?
So there's a hope on the UK government side that the UK will not be a priority for Trump in terms of his sort of direct provocations. And one of the reasons for that is that one of the things Donald Trump dislikes is countries that run persistent trade surpluses with the United States, which means they continually sell more to the US than they buy. Donald Trump thinks that this is other countries taking advantage of the United States. The UK has a pretty balanced trade with the US, sometimes surplus, sometimes deficit, but there's no persistent problem from a Trump perspective. This is different from the EU, which does have a persistent surplus with the US, and it's something that Trump has criticized quite frequently. So the UK is hoping, in a way, it can go under the radar. In terms of how it intends to deal with Trump, if it does get hit by tariffs, in the first instance, it will try to negotiate. And there's a question there as to what can the UK offer Trump to placate him? And that could be we offer to buy more things. And what could we buy? One possibility is we buy more weapons. Defense spending is going up anyway. Perhaps more of that gets directed to the US, or perhaps the exact same amount gets directed to the US as was going to happen before, but we package it up as a big offer and give Donald Trump a win. We could also invite him to meet the king. These sorts of things matter.
Well, that's all we've got time for. My thanks to Sam Lowe, David Hennig, Meredith Crowley and Duncan Weldon. And my conclusion, hold tight, we're in for a bumpy ride. As for us, this is the last in the current series. We'll be back in March. Goodbye. You've been listening to The Briefing Room with me, David Aronovich. The producers were Beth Ashmead-Latham, Kirstine Knight and Charlotte MacDonald. The sound engineer was James Beard. The editor is Richard Varden. Another edition of this podcast will be along again soon.
I'm Michael Gove, and in a new series for Radio 4, I'll be discussing how to survive politics. I'll be joined by fellow politicians to discuss how politics really works.
It is only because of your principles that it is worthwhile.
We'll be talking about how to build alliances.
You're all trying to make the world a better place, and you have quite a lot in common.
How to cope with being unpopular, and how to stick to your principles when things get tough.
Faith, family and friends are very important.
Has there been a time when you felt betrayed? Do you think you've ever done the betraying?
Surviving Politics with me, Michael Gove. Find it on BBC Sounds in the Politically feed.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.